everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish, where we are talking all things IT Pro, Enterprise, Windows, software, and all that good stuff. And hanging out with us again is my good buddy who's way up in the Seattle area. His name is Mr. Nick Fillingham. How is it going today, Mr. Nick?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I am peachy, right? It's always fun to be podcasting. And Nick, I want to dial the wheel back a little bit, if you will, but we did an episode not too long ago where we were talking about the deployment wheel, right? There's the steps you can walk through that are going to help you get that migration process, one, organized, under control, and underway. But there's a couple different tools that Microsoft has that can actually kind of ease the burden, if you will. There's things like Windows Analytics, and then there's also Autopilot. And I think is worthy of an episode to talk through some of these things, because you know, migrations can be challenging, but you don't have to go at it alone. We've talked about Desktop App Assure on previous episodes, how that can help you. If you're not familiar with that, dig down through the links below and you'll definitely find that stuff. But I think it's worthy to talk about some of these other things because it's only going to help people at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah. So I think back in episode 2, where we introduced or we talked about the Microsoft 365 Deployment Center, and the top of the deployment center is this wheel. And there, I think there's 8 steps on the wheel that, and you can enter the wheel at any point based on where you are on your sort of cloud migration, Microsoft 365 deployment journey. But it's a great resource. And 2 of the resources that I think are referenced there at different stages, at the very top is around about really identifying what your estate looks like. I know that's your new favorite word.
It is my new favorite word for describing environment is estate.
And like the very first step before you even contemplate a migration is knowing what you have. What do you have? Yeah. What am I working with here? And that's a really interesting question. There are a lot of IT teams who have that under control. They can tell you with pinpoint precision and 100% total confidence, this is how many endpoints. This is the mix of operating systems. This is the mix of Office. They know everything. And then there are a bunch of organizations who maybe don't have that level of fidelity. And there's a lot of reasons why. It's nothing to do with the competency or maturity of the IT team. A lot of the times there are acquisitions. A lot of the times there are restructures. A lot of the times there are process changes that are beyond the control of IT. So for example, you know, they might have changed a different OEM supplier or device supplier, right? They might have bought through company A previously and now they've moved to company B and they have different devices and a different process. So there's all of these factors at play that can influence whether or not an IT team have perfect or imperfect understanding of what are they working with, what's in their estate. And so we developed this tool, again, I want to say it's at least a year old, maybe more like 2, we call Windows Analytics. And Windows Analytics is going to evolve very soon. In fact, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, we may have formally evolved from Windows Analytics to Desktop Analytics. But the fundamentals of this tool are actually pretty simple. And it's all about making the telemetry, and telemetry is really, if you're not familiar with the word telemetry, it's really a term that's borrowed from, I think it's from aircraft, where it's a sort of a real-time view of the health of what's happening. So I think telemetry in an airplane or flying, you can interrupt me here, Brad, because I think I'm kind of, I'm not into, you're a pilot, right? Did I make that up?
No, I'm not a pilot, but I do enjoy the aircrafts, like looking at them, I should say.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought you were like an aspiring / amateur pilot. Where'd I get that from?
I don't know.
Oh, well.
It definitely wasn't from Samo.
It's probably all those Fortnite videos of you parachuting around the terrain. Do you parachute in Fortnite? I haven't played Fortnite.
You do. You jump out of an aircraft. So it's
yes. I have played a lot of Just Cause where you where you do jump out of aircraft and you kind of wingsuits and parachute. Anyway, so it's borrowed from I think from airplanes where you wanna have access to all this data so you can know how the engine's performing, how the rudder's performing, how's the wing performing, what's the hydraulic pressure, what's the fuel levels, blah blah blah. So it's all of this kind of real time data that you get from all the various instruments and all the various components of the airplane to allow you to make decisions. to understand how you're going to change the way you're flying this plane. Mm-hmm. And that's what telemetry is. Telemetry is also meant to be very low intensity. It's meant to be, it's not meant to be, it's not meant to actually impact the operation of the thing. So you're playing, in theory, a good telemetry system is kind of sort of passively watching what's going on and reporting back without having any real stress or toll on the system. And that's the same thing with Windows. A Windows PC generates what we also refer to as telemetry. And telemetry is anonymous and anonymized data that talks about that explains kind of what's happening with your PC right now. How is your PC running? It's all the way from what's the capacity of your battery? How much storage do you have left? What RAM? How much RAM is installed on your machine? What version of Windows? What's the latest security update? Did you have any failures? When was the last time you had a blue screen? All of this is telemetry. It is data that is being generated around the health and the status of your device, and it's anonymous. So there are lots and lots of privacy controls in place around how that telemetry data is created, what telemetry data is created, and then you have full control over what you share or don't share with Microsoft and kind of upload into the Microsoft cloud. But it's very, very powerful. And so the Windows Analytics Service was created to allow IT teams to harness all of this telemetry from all of the endpoints in their estate so that they could get a higher degree of fidelity and visibility into what's happening. And so I talked before how there are some IT teams that have that can tell you with total confidence how many endpoints they have and what's running on their endpoints and what the status is. That's great. But there are others that can't. And that's because a lot of the times they have a very, very, very diverse estate and they have lots of moving parts and lots of change and lots of, you know, there's a lot of legacy and a lot of things that have changed. And so the Windows Analytics Service, which will soon be called the Desktop Analytics Service, can really help with that. It's actually very simple to set up. It's a feature or it's a benefit. Desktop Analytics is a benefit of customers with a Windows E3 or a Microsoft 365 E3 license. And an IT team simply enables telemetry on their endpoints. And so they can do that through policy. And then the telemetry is stamped, and this is kind of a colloquialism, but I'm kind of paraphrasing it. The telemetry is stamped with a unique identifier for that organization. So that's a big, like probably a long hexadecimal kind of salted hashed thing. It doesn't say Brad Sam's, LLC. It'll be some giant weird hash thing. But that's a way that your devices in your estate can be identified as being your devices on your estate. And so then what you do is like through the Windows Analytics Service or through the Desktop Analytics Service, you basically put that unique identifier for your company ID in, and that's through setting up a tenant and doing all the fun stuff with Azure Active Directory, and then you can basically then say to the Microsoft cloud, again heavily paraphrasing here, show me all of the devices in the Microsoft cloud that have sent telemetry with this unique identifier. Then you get to see this kind of wonderful detailed view of what is in your estate. The first thing you'll find out is you'll find how many PCs you have. And believe it or not, there are a lot of IT teams out there that can't tell you with empirical precision how many PCs do they have in their estate. And so one of the very first things this tool can do is it can say, here's how many PCs you have. And then we'll tell you what the various versions of Windows and what feature updates are running on those various PCs. And then we'll tell you about security compliance. Who was on the latest Windows security updates? Who is maybe N-1, N-2, or who is out of compliance from a security perspective? Excuse me. And then the tool can actually go even further and dig into apps. And it can say, we will give you an inventory of all the apps running across your entire estate. That's another question a lot of IT teams can't answer. How many apps do you have running in your estate? IT teams can say, well, here are the apps that we deploy. Here are the apps that are part of our kind of standard rollout to devices. But, you know, if some of those devices or some of those users have the ability to install their own apps, then the question of how many apps are running in your estate is much more amorphous, and IT mm-hmm. teams don't necessarily know how to answer that. So this tool then allows you to work out, well, then how many apps do I have running? And then the tool can go a lot further in that it can actually help you dig into those apps and actually understand where there may be some issues. So this tool is really interesting for moving from Windows 7 to Windows 10 and then keeping your Windows 10 devices updated through the various update releases. So, you know, 1903 is the most current, but, you know, every 6 months or so there is a feature update. This tool allows you to look across your estate, dig into the kind of readiness level of those devices based on the apps that are running on them as well. The tool goes an extra step again in that it actually talks to SCCM. So you can create deployment plans. So if you have a large estate and you want to divide that estate up into kind of subgroups or groups of devices, you know, Brad, I'm sure the IT pros in watching this, I'm not an IT pro. I think I probably should have said that up front. I can sort of talk a little bit of the lingo to the point where I probably sound like I know what I'm talking about, but I think the actual IT pros are probably pulling all their hair out going like, this guy's not using the right taxonomy. So apologies. I'm probably not using the right taxonomy, whether it's groups or collections for how you think about the groups of devices, but you can create a deployment plan. So let's say I have a relatively small business and I have an office on the West Coast and an office on the East Coast. So I can divide my entire estate into two groups. I can have an East Coast group or collection and a West Coast group collection. And then I can kind of manage those independently. And I can kind of look at just the East Coast devices and I can see how they're going with their security and feature update kind of compliance and where there may be some issues with the apps on those devices. And then I can go, you know, a step further and then connect all that into SCCM to go and create and execute against deployment plans. So this is kind of one of those tools where hopefully what I've said kind of has kind of piqued your interest enough that you want to go on more. And I really encourage you to do that, because the question I would ask, if you're listening to this and you are an IT pro or you're an IT decision maker, you're in the world of IT, if you can answer the question empirically of how many endpoints are in your estate, what's the current Windows update and security update versions and kind of compliance status of all those devices and how many apps you have, if you feel good that you can answer that question, awesome, more power to you. If you feel like you don't necessarily can't really necessarily answer that question, and you would like more visibility to be able to answer that question and just get that level of depth and fidelity into what's in your state, highly, highly encourage you to go check out Windows Analytics, which will soon be called Desktop Analytics. There's a really interesting roadmap too for how that service is going to evolve more and incorporate Office and Office readiness, Office add-ins, Office macros. That's going to come over time as well. But again, this is a very, very powerful tool to get an incredible level of visibility into your estate. And I kind of really encourage readers,
listeners,
watchers,
observers,
Enterprise Dish subscribers to go check it out.
Yeah. It's you just kind of reminded me from back in the days when I used to dig into this stuff, and in the consulting world, we'd often go to small businesses and we would do a catalog exactly like this. And a lot of times they would just hand over a spreadsheet and you always, and it's like, okay, I just kind of got to assume that this person actually updated what, you know, antivirus they're running, what, how much RAM is in this machine and all that stuff. Like, but that is the old world of before, if you're not paying for, because there are software solutions out there for cataloging IT software or hardware.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is not a unique product from an output perspective. Like, there's lots of inventorying and kind of assessment tools out there. I think this one's unique though, in that it utilizes the raw telemetry that's being sent from the Windows endpoints through just what Windows kind of natively creates. So there's no extra agent you have to install on the device. It's simply about enabling the various levels of telemetry. That telemetry is being sent up into the Microsoft cloud simply with an anonymized but unique identifier. So then you can kind of pull it out through a web service. So it's potentially a lower taxing solution from an endpoint perspective. You don't need to run an extra agent to kind of do this. So it's not super unique in that sense, but we think it's a very powerful tool. And again, there are a lot of people that we talk to out there in IT land who they don't have an empirical view left or right of what's in their estate, and this tool helps that.
Yeah. And that's more, I'm a big fan of data, because we've heard it, it's a little cliche at this point, but data is the new oil, right? But data on your own estate.
Sorry, data is the new what?
New oil. O-I-L.
Oil.
Yeah.
Expand on that one for me.
Because it's very, very valuable.
Oh, got it. Sorry. I was, for some reason, I was thinking like lubrication.
Oh.
Like it's new. It's
well, it does make things business. Move, sort of. Helps make decisions, but it's data is very valuable, and having more data about your own estate is only going to help you make better decisions, which kind of segues perfectly into our next little topic here, because if you are going to be looking, if you look at a machine and say, hey, look, this thing's completely outdated, the hard drive is spinning rust, it's not going to survive much longer, and you need to deploy new hardware, Nick, Microsoft has a cool thing called Autopilot, and don't be confused with the Tesla version, which is grabbing some headlines, but Microsoft Autopilot is going to help you move along that journey of replacing hardware. I believe that's correct, right?
It is, and I just realized, Brad, that we have chosen two services or two things to talk about that borrow from air travel.
Oh, yeah, so you're right.
Desktop Analytics obviously is leveraging telemetry borrowed from air travel.
Yep.
And then this is literally called Autopilot, which is obviously a nautical term. Nautical? No, that's
sea. Aeronautical.
Aeronautical. Thank you very much. So this is really interesting. Autopilot, you may have heard about it. Maybe you're even deploying it. It's fascinating. When I talked to the engineering team that built Autopilot, especially when they first came up with it, they said a really interesting thing, which I really like, and I've kind of borrowed this. Apologize, I just knocked the microphone, if that
kind of fine.
Boomed in your ears. And the story they told about, well, what is Autopilot? And the story they tell is that if those of us that are lucky enough to have purchased or received a new Windows device at some point in the past, or have gone through that process of installing or reinstalling the Windows operating system, may remember that what we call the FRE, the first run experience, the very first time you turn that machine on, that can be a bit of a challenge. That can be a little bit of a confusing experience. I know myself that I've kind of not been paying attention, a professional, someone who's done it professionally many, many times. I've been not paying attention and accidentally chosen the option that says, who owns this device?
Options
are I own it or my company owns it. And I've just not paid attention and hit next. And I think the default up the top is that I own it. And what that question is really asking you, it used to ask, I think back in like the XP days, you used to say like, are you going to domain join this device? Mm-hmm. Domain join, work group, or none? I think might've been the three options, something like that. And you used to say, do you want to domain join? And I think as we made that first run experience more user friendly, we realized that domain join means literally nothing to a consumer or to an end user or a student. So we changed that language to say, who owns the device? I do, or my company. But I've been setting up my work device and accidentally hit the I own it and then just kind of moved forward with the wizard and gotten to the point where I'm like in my desktop and like everything appears, looks good, looks great. And then I find out very quickly, or maybe even a few days or even a few weeks later, that my device isn't domain joined because I actually inadvertently skipped that step.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always a simple process to domain join your device, right? Because especially if I started using that device, right? So if I thought that everything was set up, and so I've started to create some files and started to set up my email and started to send some mail and do some work, and then I find like I can't access the corporate resources and all that kind of stuff. So the learning here was that first run experience was for some people, sort of a stressful experience, right?
Yeah.
Because we were asking you questions that you may not know the answers to. And if you picked the wrong answer, sometimes it was a pretty laborious task to kind of get back to where you needed to be or to kind of resolve that. And so the kind of vision or the mission statement of the engineering team here was actually pretty fun. It was, can we engineer a solution here where can we make people love that experience?
Mm-hmm.
Can we turn that experience of turning on a new PC for the very first time? Everyone loves getting a new PC. Like everyone loves getting something new, right?
Right.
You know, you get this beautiful, shiny new piece of, you know, milled aluminum, as you Americans say, or aluminium.
I was about to do it. Yep, you got me.
I don't even know. Is it aluminum? What? No. Is it? I think the surfaces are made of some like
a magnesium.
Magnesium alloy thing.
Yes.
I think we're all meant to have more magnesium in our diet. I think it helps with like muscle relaxation.
Really?
So. I think we should all lick our surfaces to just kind of get...
eating dinner on it.
yeah, just to get some extra... No, don't do that. Everyone loves getting a new device. You know, that's like, there's an adrenaline surge. And, you know, that's a great thing when you get a new device. It's super exciting. All the potential is there. Mm-hmm. And then you hit that power button and you have to read through 19 pages of the EULA. And it says, do you accept this? And you go, oh, okay, I guess I do. And you hit accept. And then, you know, you're asked a few questions. And one of them is either, do you want to domain join this device or tell me who owns it? You do or your company does. And that's can be a really stressful process. And so the engineering team really wanted to say, let's make people love that new device experience. Let's make it so simple and so accessible that people actually love not just getting a new device from a bright and shiny perspective, but even going through that process. And so when Autopilot is configured, or the way that you kind of can configure Autopilot, and there's now lots of different ways of using Autopilot, which is really exciting. And again, if you have heard about Autopilot, and if the next, you know, if this episode kind of piques your interest, I really encourage you to go and search more for Windows Autopilot. We might have something here on the Chiron-y thing, and learn more about Autopilot. But yeah, what you're doing, or kind of in its raw sense, you, the IT or person, or your supply chain when you're buying a new device, is that the device ID or some kind of identifier for that device that you're purchasing. So Brad Sams is working in office. Samo is working in office. And Samo's IT admin says, time to get a new device.
Yep.
Go choose your new device. Here's your web page, or here's the list. You can choose. When you say, I'm going to choose this device. And as part of that procurement process, and as part of the, you know, that gets approved and it goes through and the purchase is made. And once that individual device has been allocated from inventory with whoever the supplier is or whoever the distributor is, right? So we now know which actual machine is going to come off the shelf and go into a box and get shipped to Brad Sams. That identifier for that device, which, you know, serial number or something that's very unique to that device, your IT teams can then have that automatically or manually, but hopefully automatically kind of ingested into the company tenant. So Brad Sams LLC or whatever you guys are, Petri LLC, that unique identifier for that device gets ingested into the tenant. And so now that device doesn't have to be first shipped to IT. That device doesn't have to go to a processing center or an IT team. No one from your IT team has to actually touch that device.
That's
that device
nice.
Gets shipped straight to you. So it literally leaves the factory and or the distributor, and it goes straight to you. No one else touches it.
That's and huge. That,
in
that
transit,
really is huge.
And while that's happening, your IT team now, because they have that unique identifier for that device, they can set up, and they probably already have set it up, but they can now go and set up whatever configuration they want. They can say, okay, Brad needs Office 365 Pro Plus. So we're going to have Office 365 Pro Plus installed automatically on this device. And we use OneDrive for Business. So we're going to also configure OneDrive for Business. And here are a bunch of policies or MDM policies. We're going to manage this through the MDM channel. So we'll do an enrollment into Azure Active Directory. And here are the various kind of MDM policies that we want to kind of implement from a security perspective and a compliance perspective. And then here are some other things that we kind of want to do. And so IT are doing all of that where they sit. They're not touching their device. They're not talking to you. They're doing that hopefully at scale too. They don't need to do it uniquely for you as Brad Sams. But again, so this device has left the factory. It hasn't gone to IT. It's gone straight to you. You get this device, you crack the seal, you open the box,
best part.
You take it out, you turn it on for the very first time, and you're going to, I think it's four questions or it could be three, but you're asked a very small number of questions. I think the first is going to be, gosh, I should actually know this. Should we pause for 1 second and yep. I'll bring them up? Gosh, what are the four questions?
Oh, the first four questions that are asked.
It's like keyboard, language, no, language, keyboard, Wi-Fi, email address.
Yep, that sounds right.
Okay.
So rewind it in time. That way I can splice in you talking. You can just start off by saying the four questions that are asked. And then...
Yep. All right. So that device is shipping directly from the factory to you. It's not going via IT. So the device arrives. You crack the seal. You open up the box. You pick this beautiful brand new device out of the box and you put it on your desk and you turn it on. And you're really going to get three, maybe four questions. And they're hopefully very straightforward, plain English. Oh, by the way, Cortana also reads them to you too.
Yes, so, that is correct.
You don't even have to touch your keyboard. You can actually just talk to Cortana. So the four questions, I may get this wrong, but the premise is accurate. The first question I believe is, what language should we proceed in? And so here you can change to whatever language you would actually like to have your device set up in. Unfortunately, there's no Australian English, so I just choose English. We'll get there one day, maybe. And then the next question is about keyboard layout, and you can either keep the default keyboard layout or even add a secondary keyboard layout if you need to type in a secondary language on your keyboard. I believe the third question is connecting to the internet, and if you have a wired connection, then you're actually, you know, there's no real nothing mm-hmm. to actually select here. And then the fourth is really just saying, all right, who are you? Give me your email address. But I want to back up a second because I didn't actually explain what happens behind the cover. So you turn this device on for the very first time, and you've said, here's my language, here's my keyboard, and you've connected to the internet. And what's happening is before you get asked who are you, there's a little handshake that's happening. So that device ID, that unique identifier for that device you just turned on, gets sent up to the Microsoft cloud and talks to Azure Active Directory. And it just says a very simple thing. It says, here's a device ID. Do you know it? Do you have any record of it? And Azure Active Directory is going to return one of two things. It's going to say, nope, never heard of it. Or it's going to say, yes. And if it says yes, it's going to say, I have this device ID. It is associated with a tenant for whatever we said, Brad, Sam, Samo LLC, Petri LLC. And so the next screen you'll see is actually a customized login screen for your company. So you'll see your little logo and it'll say petri.com Samo LLC. This device is registered with this yep. This tenant. Please enter, who are you entering your email address? You'll enter in your email address, you'll authenticate with your password, and that's it, and you're done. And from that point, the autopilot service takes over. The autopilot service enrolls the device into the Intune tenant, and it now starts to configure the device based on the settings that your IT team have set up around security, around compliance, and it goes and installs all the various apps and kind of services that you need. So it'll install Office 365 Pro Plus. It'll set up OneDrive and all of the other kind of services that your IT team has said are kind of part of your configuration. And so when that process finishes, you finish on the Windows desktop with Windows installed, with Office installed, and then any of the other kind of line of business apps and other services that your IT team says that you needed. And you are ready to work. There is nothing else you have to do. The device is joined, it's enrolled in your tenant. So it's part of your company network. Your Office installation is there. It's authenticated. It's ready to go. Your Outlook is ready for you to open it up and start being productive by sending emails, writing emails, joining meetings, et cetera, et cetera. So we've gone from this potential kind of sort of stressful, maybe even error-prone scenario where you sort of have to know what you're doing in that first run experience. Yep. And then coming out of first run experience, and then you have to go install Office, then you have to go and set up. And a lot of the times your IT team would do that for you. So in the past, before Autopilot, you would buy a new device. It would be shipped to your IT team or some kind of interim processing team, and they would do all that. they would go through the first run setup. They would get you joined to the corporate network and the domain. They would install Office. They would make sure all the policies and stuff. And then they would put it back in the box and tape it up and then ship it to you, probably with a temporary username and password, blah, blah, blah. That's all a thing of the past with Autopilot. Autopilot has automated all of that. The experience is
big efficiency win.
Absolutely. And the great news is it's not just now for new devices. You can also experience Autopilot for what we call kiosks. So kind of first line devices that aren't necessarily associated with an individual user. And then you can also experience Autopilot as part of a migration from Windows 7 to Windows 10. So if you have a piece of hardware you're gonna keep, because that hardware is modern enough and not yet ready to retire, you can actually give that Autopilot experience to your end users and again set up skip all of that setup confoundery. That's a word. Complexity.
There we go.
And get your users up and running nice and quick and super productive. Yeah. So again, if any of that sounded interesting in any capacity, and I've paraphrased a lot of that, and I apologize profusely to the Autopilot team for anything I got wrong. Go and search for Windows Autopilot and learn about it. There's a great article on docs.microsoft.com. Hopefully we can put that URL up. Very powerful tool.
Yeah.
And it's really going to make IT teams. Role like it's going to make IT's life much easier, and it's going to make a great experience for end users who are getting a new device or migrating from Windows 7 to 10.
It really is a neat addition to that deployment process. That because there's always been that role before we roll into the dish, if you will. That they get the 10 new machines in, and what are they going to do all day? They're going to provision new machines, and being able to take that burden out of the process is going to unlock a lot of free time. It's a very serious tool that can help you in many different ways.
Yeah, one of the things that that team used to say is I don't think the majority of people in IT. Went into IT because they want to spend their life configuring new devices. People don't go into IT because they want to just spend day in, day out, with USB keys and DVDs and Pixie boot and just be kind of rebuilding PCs and configuring someone else's PC. Some of us like that. I actually don't mind that. I actually do like building a new machine or rebuilding machine. It can be a very cathartic experience. But most people don't go into IT to do that. They want to solve big problems. Yep. They want to use technology to solve a big problem. It's a tool that they want to use. They want to wield in a way that has a really positive outcome. And so this is helping to reduce that burden on IT and really make it much more efficient and helping end users get much more productive, much faster.
All right, Nick, this is gonna segue perfectly. As we roll up here on the end of the episode, the back of the book, it's time for the dish. We've been talking about new hardware for a long time. Well, not a long time, about Autopilot and all that good stuff. What was your very first PC?
The first PC that I think technically my family owned was an Osborne 286 or a 386 SX. And the reason why I say technically own is that my dad was in the world of academia for a while. And so he would bring like home Apple Macs, the beautiful little all-in-one kind of, famous first Macintosh. He would bring one of those back. Home to kind of work on every now and then. It belonged to the institution. So we would have one of those in the house that we could kind of play with. I think every now and then he'd bring home like an Apple II or an Apple IIe. I do remember a neighbor had a, it wasn't a Commodore, but it was sort of a type of sort of Commodore clone. But the first thing that we owned, the very first one that we owned was an Osborne, I think it was a 286 SX.
Okay.
And I think Osborne was to IBM what AMD is to Intel in some ways, in terms of they were like, they both created like a similar product from a platform perspective. And I think where Intel was sort of the incumbent and sort of seen as the premium, and AMD is sort of like the up and comma, doing interesting kind of little things. Maybe that's not a great analogy, but I think IBM was like, the more expensive platform if you wanted a PC, and Osborne was kind of like the, and they were the incumbent, and I think Osborne was kind of like the up and comer. That's just my 30 plus year old memory of it in Australia. So it could be very, very different in other, you know, here in the US. That was the first PC. And I also remember the very first time it got upgraded, because these were the days where you would upgrade your PC. Like you would upgrade it. And I remember that dad sent it away for some period of time, and it came back with this funny box in it that had like a smaller kind of envelope thing that you would like press a button, and the envelope would go like, and it would come out. Mm-hmm. And you would kind of like press these things on the side and open it up. And inside was something called a CD-ROM. And we had two CD-ROMs. We had two. One was called Encarta.
Oh, Encarta. Yes, yes.
Which, and the other was, I want to say it was like Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, okay, or something like that. And they, I think they were the two we had. Oh no, we had a third, which was like a demo CD, and it had like a surround sound, which wasn't actually surround sound. It had like some sound demo and had some like 3D thing. It might have had like a very rudimentary game on it. And then maybe like a video, like an early MPEG to kind of show what like colored moving video kind of look like on a computer. But I remember that thing coming back into the house and just going like, what?
Very cool.
Is that? And I'd press the button and it would go like, and the cassette thing would come out and you'd kind of click it. I remember very distinctly there was like two little buttons on the side and the lid would open. And then you'd put the CD inside and then you'd close the lid and then you'd kind of re-inject the cassette thing. And it felt like a very inefficient way of taking and using CDs, but I remember that.
Very cool.
And I think that was running 3.1, Windows 3.1.
Yeah, it sounds about right. CDs coming online around that time.
Yeah. So that's my earliest memory.
Very cool. I think mine definitely started with a very classic, like Apple II. Type of 2C or 2E, can't remember which, and then just kind of progressed from there.
What do you remember playing? Like, do you remember, was there a game or
same idea? There was two games. One very old, a Top Gun game, probably around not long after the movies came out or whatever. But the one game I remember playing as a kid hundreds of thousands of times, it was a demo. It was called Jazz the Jackrabbit.
I vaguely remember that.
It was like best way to describe it is a terrible ripoff of Sonic,
okay,
I believe. And I remember, and it wasn't even the full game. It was just the demo. It had like two levels. And I remember playing that and trying to see how, it was like effectively speed running to see how quickly I could beat it. So many, many years ago.
Yeah, I remember two things playing on the all-in-one Apple Mac was Prince of Persia.
Yep.
Which was monochrome. And like whatever's less than 8-bit sound, because I feel like it only had like two noises. It was either like a splat noise for when you'd fall on the spikes, or there'd be like some little like sprite sound for when you drank the potion that didn't kill you. So Prince of Persia in monochrome, and then a really early kind of rudimentary programming tool that I want to say was called Turtle. Do you remember this?
Turtle.
It was like where you could program like a little turtle on the screen to like.
I don't remember that
and
one.
Draw pictures. Anyway, that's it. That's as far back as my memory goes.
Well, fortunately, you're much more up to date on all the Microsoft technologies, Mr. Nick. But we very much appreciate you stopping by today. This was a great discussion about autopilot, analytics, and all that good stuff. To everybody else, there'll be links down below. Make sure you hit that subscribe button, and we will catch all of you right back here next time on the Enterprise Dish.